They were beginning here on the top of Nukgimo Medalef, about 7 lines down. Gemara's continuing to discuss what is the end time period in terms of Shemitah for certain fruits and vegetation. When do we say that that is no longer available in the Sadeh, so that people no longer can eat it in their houses? As we discussed yesterday, the principle that as long as it's available to the Chayab Sadeh, then one can have it for the Behema in the house or can keep it in their house. So here the Gemara is discussing Tan Rabbanan, Ochlim Banavim, one can eat grapes, Ad Sheyichlu Daliot Shel Uchel, that you can eat the grapes until the last of the grapes is finished off. Now Daliot, as Rashi says over here, refers to trellis, or these are the way that they used to string up the grapevines, or put them onto trellises, and that's how they grew fruit in their day. Uchel is a name of a place, a Makom Kramim, as Rashi says, a place that was heavily laden with vineyards. And some have the Girsa that it's Avel or Avel Kramim, which is also another location that was heavy in vineyards. So until the last of the grapes finish from there, you know that there's still grapes available in the region, and you don't have to worry about eating grapes. Im yesh mucharot mehen, ochlim alehem. And if there are later grapes that are still on the vines that are around or available even after those in these specific areas, then you can continue to eat the grapes based on those that are out in the field. You eat in the zeitin, you can eat olives until the last of the olives are finished off in Tekoa. Tekoa is a place that was famous for its zeitin. It's found in the Hare Yehuda, the modern day Tekoa. If you go to there, one of the signs that they have in front of them is about their uniqueness for growing olives and making olive oil. As the Gemara says, that Tekoa is alpha. Alpha, like Aleph or A, is top quality for oil, and that's the oil that was used in the menorah in the Mikdash. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Ad Sheyichleh Acharon Shel Gush Chalav. Then until the last olives are finished off in Gush Chalav. Gush Chalav is in the location, as Rashi says, of Shevet Menashe. Shevet Menashe, who Moshe Rabbeinu gives them the brocha of Tovel B'Shemen Raglo, that they will have plenty of oil in their area of their Shevet, their geographic location. So it refers to that. Means that an ani, a poor person, goes out and picks olives, not on its nof, on its branches, not on its trunk, meaning that there are so few olives that are left out of there that he can't even squeeze a rova alog, reva alog, quarter log out of those olives. That's when you know you're at the end or the termination of the olives, and you can no longer keep them in the house. You reach this mana biur for olives. You can eat from the dried figs until the last of the unripened figs come on the trees in Beitini or come off the trees in Beitini. Pagei Beitini are not mentioned as being one of the residual last areas to have figs on them, but rather they're mentioned in respect to Maser, which is Amar. Over here it's not clear what we have, whether it's a Tnan or Amar Avibi. Pagei Beitini Ve'ahini to Tuvina, with the unripened figs of Beitini and the tamarim, the dates of the place called Tuvini, Chayavin b'maser, are obligated to have maser taken off of them. They're considered to be fruits. They are considered to be chayavim in trumot and maaserot. Now, ochlim b'trumarim at shechlech ron shebitzoar. We had this before in the Gemara on the top of Nun Bet Amud Bet, which is that you can eat from the dates until the last ones end in a place, Tzoar, which is down in the Bik'ah, the Jordan Valley, in that area which is famous for its palm trees and its dates. So that is the area that's going to have the last of the dates available. So you eat until that place of Tzoar, which is probably famous for its dates. That it's only true about the dates that are up near the top of the clusters or the branches, but not about the dates that are found on in the trunk or have fallen off and are not easily accessible to the animals. Viramini, is that really true? Ochlim banavim ad Pesach, you're allowed to eat grapes until Pesach time. Bizeitim ad Atzeret, olives until Shavuot. Begrugurot ad Chanukah, and the dried figs until Chanukah time. Batmarim ad Purim, and the dates until Purim. Ve'amar Rabbi Yochanan Tarte Batraita Machlif. Rabbi says that Rabbi Yochanan flips the latter two, which is that Grugorot are really at Purim, and the Tamarim are at Chanukah. So but we have a difference here, meaning that we just said all of these locations that have specific determination for whether it's olives, grapes, dates, figs, for where they're the last ones to go. Now, all of a sudden, I have a list of time periods that have nothing to do with the location, but have to do with the calendar. So, Gemara says, first of all, they turn out to be roughly about the same measurement, meaning the measurement in time on the calendar is similar to the measurement of these locations when those fruits run out in those locations. We already said in the above, when we spoke about the different locations, that if there are later times or later places, then we eat on them. So neither of these are exact, these are estimations. Whether it's the time period of the year through the calendar, or whether it's by location, those are the most likely locations or most likely times when they'll be around. But if they exist in these places or other places after that, that's fine as well. So it's not about the exact timing or the exact location, it's about what happens. These are just ways to give people indication of where to look or what's the likely scenario. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Siman Arim Milin. Mountains are covered in Milin. If you see Milin on them, then it is a mountain. Now, Milin, it's not clear what they are. The translation roughly is an oak tree that has or produces gallnuts. Siman Amakim Dekalim, a sign of a valley is palm trees. Simana Nechalim, a sign of a river or a river bed is Kanim reeds. Simana Shvela, a sign of the plains is Shikmaz the sycamore. Vafapisha in Raya the Davar, even though this is not an absolute proof, Zecha the Davar, it does give some credence to this. Shenemar, Vaitena Melech the Kesep Yushalayim, Kavanim. It was so wealthy, Shlomo Melech, and there was so much money that he put this silver in Yushalayim, Kavanim, they were like stones. Vetarazim Natan Kishkamim. And the cedar wood was so plentiful, it was like the sycamore asher b'shvela l'rov, that are spread out on the plains in numerous quantities. So we see here that the sycamore is associated with the plains. So now the Gemara says, what's the value of this information? Simana rim milim, simana makim dekalim. The fact that the milim are a sign of the mountains, and the simana of the makim are dekalim, nafkamina lebikurim. That has implications as far as bikurim are concerned. It's not. Eme vim bikurim el mishivata minim. First of all, we have a gzera shava of eretz, and from the eretz that's mentioned by the shivat haminim to the eretz that's mentioned by the bikurim, and from that we learn out that only the shivat haminim are brought as bikurim. That's number one. Number two is that they're only brought from the best, not from anything that is subpar or not the highest quality. So therefore, you bring it from the shivat haminim, velo midgalim shebaharim, you can't bring dates from the palm trees on the mountains, because the palm trees in the valleys are better palm trees and better quality dates, and that's where you bring them from. And you don't bring them from the fruits that are in the valleys, rather from the fruits that are on the mountains, because we're looking for the higher quality produce, and for bikurim, you can only bring mishvata minim and the highest quality items. So these two simanim are indications of whether they're a har or an emek, and har and emek has implications in terms of where you bring the bikurim from, because you bring the fruits from the harim, and you bring the dates from the amakim, from the valleys. Siman nachalim kanim, the sign of a river is kanim, are reeds. Nafkamina lenachleitan, that's a nafkamina for egla rufa, which has to be done next to a river, a nachleitan, or the river bed, and the reeds are a sign of that. Siman l'shvela shikma, a sign of the plains is the sycamore, and nafkamina l'mekach u'memkar, that has to do with commerce, that if someone's selling you a shvela, then they should have a sycamore on it. Hashadadi d'hochi, now that we reach that point, or that's a nafkamina, kulu nami l'mekach u'memkar, you could say that that's a nafkamina for all of them. For mekach u'memkar, if someone sells you a mountain, if someone sells you a valley, the expectation would be that you'd find palm trees in the valley, that you'd find milim on the mountainsides, you'd find sycamores in the shvela, and that would identify them. If he promises you a shvela, then it should have these items in them. Now, the Gemara here brought a proof from the pasuk. It's not an absolute proof, even though it says that the shvela is full of sycamores, because all it says is if there are sycamores, that it's a plain. But it doesn't say that if there are no sycamores, it's not a plain. Meaning that has a positive statement about it, but it doesn't tell you that the opposite is true necessarily, and that's why it's only a zecha ledavar, it's not a raya gemura. Alright, now we move on to the next Mishnah, which is, Makom shenagu limkor behemat dakal nechrim mochrim. In locations where they sell the lighter, weaker animals to non-Jews, mochrim, you can sell them. These are animals that are usually kept around either for their milk or for their wool or for their meat. They're not used to work. They're not beasts of burden in any sense. So there, makom, where they have the minhag to sell them, they sell them. Makom, shelo nagulim kor, in places where they don't sell them, ein mochrim, you can't sell them. Ubechol makom, ein mochrim, lahem beim agasa. So the ikar gzeira, or the ikar takana, has to do with selling work animals, heavy duty animals, to the non-Jews. The problem being that we have problems in terms of shelas, chirut, and nisione. The problem of the fact that if the Jew still owns the animal, and either lends it to the non-Jew, or he rents it to the non-Jew, or he gives it to him to test, to ride, the Jew is responsible that his animal should rest on Shabbat. So they were afraid if we allow transactions with these animals, that it would come to the possible point or position that they would end up engaging these animals and working them on Shabbat when it still belonged to the Jew. And so because of that, they assured all transactions with these animals. So certain locations, in order to enforce, or to maintain the restriction, extended it not only to Beimot Gasot, but also to Beimot Dakot. Because Beimot Dakot doesn't matter because you don't work with them, so it's not really an issue in terms of working on Shabbat, but they extended to Beimot Dakot in order to make it stick or more enforceable that the gzeira of selling the Beimot Gasot to the Nachrim. Agalim, Usayachin, Shlemim, Ushvurim. This includes even calves, foals, whether they are healthy or whether they have injuries to them. All of these things are included in this restriction, despite the fact that calves and foals don't do work because they're too young, and the fact that shvurim, if they have injuries to them, then they can't work. Despite the fact the gezerah or the takana was all-inclusive, and there were no exceptions, even for those animals that they themselves can't work. Yehuda matir b'shvura. Yehuda's matir b'shvura because nobody's going to keep around an injured animal. When you buy an injured animal, you buy it to shecht right away and to use for its meat. You're not going to keep it around. The fear of the Tanakam is that if you keep around the shvura, then people are going to make a mistake because, see, a Jew sold them that animal, then they'll think they can sell him even a shlema. But Rabbi Yehuda says you'll never have that chashash because the shvura will be eliminated, it will be shechted in a very short order. Ben Meteira matir b'sus. Ben Meteira says that you can sell horses because horses are not used for work, they're only used to ride on, and riding on them is not real melacha on Shabbat because chay no seyat atzmo. So because of that, Ben Peteira believes that selling a horse is not a problem because even if melacha is done, it's only a restriction midrabanan, and not a restriction midoraita. So to have a takana for something that's only restricted midrabanan, we don't do. And therefore Ben Peteira says you can sell horses to the non-Jews, and Tosafot discusses this in Avodah Zarah, where the main sugya of this is found. He says that that is the reason that we today sell horses and we transact with the non-Jews in these animals is for because of this heter, or this idea that the assumption being that these animals are not going to be used for work or not going to be utilized in such a way that it's going to cause a problem in terms of the gzeirah. In places where they had roasted meat on the night of Pesach, you can eat it. In places where they have the minhag not to eat it, then you may not eat that on the night of Pesach. The fear here is that it looks like kodshim b'chutz. It looks like you have it, you brought a korban Pesach. Rashi in all these cases seems to suggest that the problem here is that the meat itself, the roasted meat itself, you're going to say that this is Pesach or Zu Pesach, and that's going to cause the problem. Tosafot says that that can't be the issue here because it's not an issue about calling something a Pesach afterwards, because after the fact or when it's meat, you can't call it a Pesach. As Rashi points out, it's mitnadev shelo kederach mitnadvim. He's donating or he's making kodesh, not like the normal way you make a kodesh. So it doesn't work. It's not really kodesh, but it just, people have suspicions about it. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that's not the issue. The issue is that people might think that he was makdish the animal when it was still alive. And his makdish the animal is still alive, and now what he's eating is from that animal that he was makdish. So the chashash here is that it might look like kodshim b'chutz, whether for Rashi it means that you're making it, even though it's not the normal way today, you're making it into kodshim now, or for Tosafot that you once made it into kodesh and now you're utilizing it. So that's the fear here, that it looks like kodesh. So in a place where they have the minhag not to eat it, for that reason, they don't eat it. In a place where they don't have the minhag, they did eat it because they weren't worried about that. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Asur L'Adam Shomar Basar Zeh L'Pesach Hu. Person can't say this meat is for Pesach. Rashi again says, Afil Shchutak Var, even if it's shechted. Tosafot again says that the fear here is not about the shechted meat, but rather when you say this is Pesach, it means that you made it Pesach already before it was shechted. So that's the fear over here. Now you can't say this. It looks like you're being makdish the behema. And as if you are eating kodeshim b'chutz. That's why on the Seder night, on the Leil Pesach, when it comes to the three things that one must say to Yotzei Dei Chavoto b'Pesach, we say Pesach, Matzah, Umaror. By Matzah and Maror, we do point to those items, whereas by Pesach, we don't point to the item, whatever is there to represent the Pesach, because of this fear. Amar Papa, Dafka Basar. That's only true about the meat. Avachite lo. When you're talking about wheat or grains, that's not a problem to say that it's for Pesach or Zula Pesach, because as people might think, oh, you're being makdish the wheat to use that money to pay for a korban a Pesach, that's the fear that we don't worry about, because the mint of the Pesach Amar. Because when a person does that, he doesn't mean that he wants to use the monetization of this item to buy a korban. He means that he needs this grain to be used for Pesach, so he's putting it away so it doesn't get wet, it doesn't become a problem of chometz. So since that is a reasonable assumption that people would make, we don't worry about it being an issue of kodashim. Ubasar lo. Wait a minute. Basar lo, is it really restricted, this meat, or from eating meat in this way, or pointing to it? Meitave, don't we have a story in the Tosefta, which is Amar Rabbi Yossi Todus Ish Romi. This individual was in Rome. Hinehiged bnei Romi lachol gediim ukulasim b'leilei Pesachim. He had the minhag of the people of Rome to eat roasted gedi goats, or really it's kids here because they have to be ben shana. On the night of the Pesach, they ate basically the kid, as Rashi says here, roshua karav. They roasted it the way they would roast a korban Pesach. They simulated a korban Pesach on the night. They didn't really bring a korban Pesach, but the meat that they ate at the Leila Seder simulated that, and they brought these megidim mukulasim. The word mukulas comes from the word of a helmet that's used by Goliath, and it's because the way that it's roasted is that they put the innards of the animal around it, and then they roast it. So that's why it's called a gedim mukulas. But that's the way that you did the korban Pesach with zman hamikdash. Shalchulo lechamim sentemi emelei todus ata gzrani alecha nidui. If it was not for the fact that you were todus, we would put you into nidui for the fact that you're engaging the people in this minog that really leads to a serious problem of looking like kodeshim b'chutz. Shatam achil tiso kodeshim b'chutz. Kodeshim sal kodatcha. He's not really feeding them kodeshim. Elayim akam rov leachil tiso kodeshim b'chutz. It's close. It looks like it. It's very on the edge here because you're doing it or practicing what was done to the korban of Pesach, even though you're not doing it the Pesach, it looks like a Pesach, and it could easily come to that mistake. So Gemara says, mikulas in. The only problem here is because it was mikulas, that he roasted it in the way that it was done for the korban of Pesach. Shame mikulas lo. But if it wasn't roasted that way, it wouldn't be a problem. So why do we have a problem with the korban of Pesach, the night of Pesach, eating roasted meat in general? It only seems to be if it was done exactly like the way the korban Pesach was done. Samrei mikulos lo shna. Amar lo shna lo amar. Now the difference is that if it's roasted in the manner that the korban Pesach was roasted, doesn't matter if he says zu Pesach or he doesn't say zu Pesach. That's problematic no matter what. Sheinu mikulash, if it's not roasted, then perush in, lo perush lo. Then only if he explicitly states it, is it a problem. If he doesn't state it, it's not a problem. So we had this statement before by Rav Yehuda, who said that there's a problem about speaking the Basar and calling it a Pesach on the night of Pesach. So we thought that was the problem, naming it. Then we bring Teodoshi's Romi, who says that the only problem, or for that, it seems to be the only problem, is that you roast it the way that it was done, like the Korban of Pesach. So Gemara reconciles between those two and says, well, it depends. If it's Mikulas, if it's roasted the way the Korban of Pesach was roasted, then it's asur no matter what. Doesn't matter if you say something, don't say something, it's problematic. On the other hand, when it comes to the other meats on that night, or other roasted meats on that night, then only if you say that zu Pesach is it problematic. But to stam, eat the meat, it's not problematic. And that's why they had minhagim, different minhagim in different places, whether to eat it or not. They can eat it, but you're not permitted, even in the places where you're permitted to eat the roasted meat on the night of Pesach, you're not permitted to say zu Pesach. Rav Acha said over this, right, with Rabbi Shimon. As opposed to it being Rabbi Yossi, he said that it was Rabbi Shimon. Because the Braita that we just brought, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Todus Yishromi, over here he says that that wasn't Amar Rabbi Yossi, but rather Amar Rabbi Shimon. So now the Gemara says, I am Bishlam Adaman de Tani like Rabbi Yossi Necha. According to the one who says that it was Rabbi Yossi, it makes sense. Adaman de Matnila ke Rabbi Shimon mi Necha. If you put Rabbi Shimon as the author, why does it make sense? Vatanan. Rabbi Shimon says that when you come to donate, here it's a case of a mincha. Person says, "Arei alai minchat seorim." Person says that I'm going to bring a mincha of seorim. Well, there's no mincha in the mikdash that comes from seor, except there's two exceptions. There's the mincha of the sota and the mincha to omer, but neither of those are brought by a private individual on a voluntary basis. So here this person is donating or saying that he's going to bring a mincham sorim to the mikdash, which doesn't exist. Also, menachot are made out of chitim. So when he says that, the question is, what is his obligation? So there are those that say, the chachamim, that say that tfos lo shon rishon, that we go after his first statement. He already said, harei alai mincha. Reilai Minchah already obligates him. When he said Seorim, afterwards he comes to change his mind and modify it, doesn't matter, because he already obligated himself in a Minchah, and he has to bring a Minchah of Chitim. Rabbi Shimon over there says he's patur, because Shelo Yitnadev Gederi Mitnavim. Because when he made his statement was not the normal way to donate. And since it's not the normal way to donate, it doesn't take effect. So over here also, when you're talking about the Gedim Gulas, according to Rabbi Yossi, I can make sense of that. I can make heads or tails out of that. Because it would be Kodesh if he made it or said that this was Pesach or he acted in this way. He made it a Gedim Gulas. According to Rabbi Shimon, this isn't the way to make Kodashim. This isn't the normal way to donate to the Mikdash or bring a korban of Pesach, so it shouldn't have been a problem. So, Rabbi Yossi believes, Afik Mar Darav Adam Nitpas. A person is held accountable not only for the first thing he said, but also the latter part of his statement. But over here, where his first statement was, Harei Alay Mincha, that already obligated him. When he says, Minas Seorim, he tried to modify that or change his mind, we don't allow it to take effect. So there, it doesn't take effect. But Rabbi Shimon says, wait a minute, it does take effect, because he holds like Rabbi Yossi that it's Tofes. Both the first statement and the latter statement are Tofes, but he also says he's mitnadev shloka derech mitnadvim, and that's why it doesn't take effect. So therefore he's not, oh, he doesn't have to bring any mincha. So over here as well, in our case of the Korban HaPesach, then why, according to Rabbi Shimon, do you worry about gedim mikulas? Because that's not kederech mitnadvim. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, who says, afik mar devarav adam nitpas, then over here, he doesn't have that qualification of kederech mitnadvim, so it could be problematic for gedim mikulas. So the one who says that that story about Todos Yishromi is authored by Rabbi Yossi makes sense. The one who says it's authored by Rabbi Shimon, we have a hard time reconciling that. According to the one who says it was written by Rabbi Yossi, is it really so easy? Rabbi Shimon b'shitad Rabbi Yossi amra. Rabbi Shimon's position is premised on the position of Rabbi Yossi. Damar af gemar dvarava dam nitpas. That we look at the entirety of the statement of the individual. Comes up in Tumurah. If a person says that, Harei zeh tumurat ola ushlamim, tries to exchange it for an Allah Shlamim. Rabbi Meir over there says, Tfos Lashon Rishon. We go after his first statement, and that's it. He tried to change his mind afterwards, it doesn't work. Rabbi Yossi says, Af Gemar Dvarav Adam Nitpas. Then we look at the entirety of his statement. He couldn't say that it's a Shlamim and Allah together. So he said them separately, but he meant for it to be both, and therefore both of them will take effect. So that's Rabbi Yossi's position, that both take effect. Now in our case, where it's Harei Alay Mincha Tzorim, that doesn't take effect because the Gemar Dvarav can't be reconciled with the first statement. So therefore, we just take the first statement, we drop the back statement. But Rabbi Shimon says, no, we hold like Rabbi Yossi, that both statements take effect. But it, since it was, he was mitnadev, shaloka derech mitnadvim, that's what makes it problematic. So Mari says, my law, mitnadev, Rabbi Shimon, suffer like Rabbi Yossi. If Rabbi Shimon's position is premised on Rabbi Yossi, then Rabbi Yossi nami suffer like Rabbi Shimon, that Rabbi Yossi also subscribes to Rabbi Shimon's position. Mari says, no, Rabbi Shimon, suffer like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shimon holds like Rabbi Yossi. His position is built on Rabbi Yossi's position that Af Gemar Dvarav Adam Nitpas. But he adds on top of that that he's Mitnadev Shelo Kederach Mitnadvim. Hello, Rabbi Yossi, suffer like Rabbi Shimon. But on the other hand, Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon. He holds that the Gemar Dvarav Adam Nitpas. But he doesn't have this principle of Rabbi Shimon about Shelo Kederach Mitnadvim. See, Bailu, Todus Ish Romi, Gavra Rabbahava. This Todos Yishromi, why were the Chachamim reluctant or reticent to put him into Nidoy? Was it because he was a big Chacham, he was a big Talmud Chacham, and it was a positive statement about him? Oh, Bali Gufim Abba. Or was he a bully? Was he someone who held a lot of political power, and therefore they were afraid to tangle with him? So Tashma, Odozu Darash Todos Yishromi. We have another statement from Todos Yishromi, and here it's a Drusha, which is, Mara Uchananya Mishael Ve'ezariyash Masru Atzmal Kedushat Hashem L'Kivshan Ha'esh. When Nebuchadnezzar comes and asks them to bow down to the Andarta, how come they refuse and they let themselves be thrown into the fire and give up their lives to Kedushat Hashem? So Rashi says over here, Shalom Dashu B'chai Bam, Shalom Yimot Bam. Why don't they have the principle that they must live or they must not give up their lives for doing any mitzvah? We'll come back and discuss that issue in the Tosafot in a second. So now, how do they know this? Nasu kal v'chomer b'atzman mitzvardim. They made a kal v'chomer from the tzvardim in the Makkah and Mitzrayim. Ma tzvardim she'im mitzuvim ha'kedushat Hashem. They have no obligation to dial kedushat Hashem. Tibu, and it says there that they followed the instruction of Hashem. Uvau v'alu b'beitecha. Says that the tzvardim are going to come into your house. Ubetanu recha ubemisharu techa. They're going to go into your ovens and they're going to go into your kneading troughs. Imatai misharot mitziot ezel tanur. When are the kneading troughs right by the oven? That's when the oven is hot. Because then they're going to take the bread from the kneading trough, put it right into the oven. So, Anu shemitzuvim akdushat Hashem achad kam v'kama. We who are nitzdavei akdush Hashem, certainly we should have to give up our lives. Here, the frogs are giving up their lives. They're going into the hot ovens. Because that's what Hashem asked for. So we, who have the Tzibur Hashem, we definitely should have to give up our lives. So therefore, it would indicate that Todesh Tishromi was a Talmud Chacham, or a positive character. Because over here, you see him making a drusha that is brought down in a breita. He actually helped provide parnosa for Talmidei Chachamim. He didn't necessarily give them money, but he allowed them to invest alongside of him in doing business. So he was able to help them make a living by having them invest alongside of him. Whoever provides business opportunities or investment opportunities for Talmidei Chachamim, Zocher Yoshev B'Shiva Shel Malo, then he gets the ranking of being entered into the Shiva Shel Malo, meaning that he's on an equal footing or an equal partner with those that actually learn. In the shadow of the wisdom, in the shadow of the kesef, of the money. Meaning that those that provide the money so that the chokhmah can be there are on equal plane with those that have the tzelach chokhmah. So those that go to Yeshiva Shel Malo and are beneficiaries of those that support them, the supporters of them also get the benefit of that learning or the stature of that learning. Now Tosafot does ask one question over here about Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Why did they give up their lives? Now, if it was Bifra Hester, if it was a public issue, then they're obligated to give up their lives. They have to give it up in a din, because Yehereg Valiyavur applies when it's Bifra Hester for any mitzvah of the Torah. So that's number one. Now, if it wasn't a problem of violation of Avera, then why were they allowed to give up their lives? So Rabbeinu Tam suggests that the Andarta that Nebuchadnezzar asked them to bow down to was not really Avodah Zarah. It was a monument to the king, and technically they could have bowed down to it. So it wasn't a problem with Avodah Zarah, and therefore they were not obligated to give up their lives because it was Vahestio or because it was Avodah Zarah, because it wasn't Avodah Zarah. Now, we have to ask the question then, why did they give up their lives? And that's this issue of the Kal V'Chomer. That even though normally we would not ask someone to give up their life in that case, they felt it was important to give up their lives because they thought others would learn from them, that they were Gedolim, and it was important for others to see that keeping the mitzvot is so important. So they did that on a voluntary basis, and that's what the Gemara is asking over here, Mara'u. What did they see in order to give up their lives? The Tosafot in the end backs away from that explanation and says the word palchan or palchu is only used really in worship, and therefore that term which is used by Hananiah, Mishael v'Azariah makes it sound like it was a Avodah Zarah and not an Andarta. The Re gives an alternative answer which says that they could have run away, that they had the opportunity to run away beforehand and not stick around. Had they run away, then they wouldn't have been forced into this situation. So why did they not take the option to run away? And that was because here they wanted to be Mekadesh Shem Shemayim. That was the Kavachom they learned from the Tzvardim. Okay, we'll stop over here.